Welcome to the Penny Bloom Podcast. Ain't another place that has got more bombast. Run past your mom, dad's listening to Tomcast. Talking everything that make you sad. We don't want that. We're here to make you smile. Put your mind at ease. Peace, love, and bloom, and always praise Keanu Reeves. This what we about. Get some weed and now. We'll talk until we can't no more, and then we peacing out. Alright, let's go. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Penny Bloom Podcast. Today, we continue our actor spotlight for one Dev Patel. In anticipation of Monkey Man. Today is movie 4 of 5 in anticipation of said. The Personal History of David Copperfield. It was released at TIFF, Toronto International Film Festival, on September 5th, 2019. It was written and directed by Armando Iannucci, with a screenplay also by Simon Blackwell, based on the novel by Charles Dickens, starring Dev Patel. I'm Colton Robertson. I'm joined by Joseph George. What's up, homie?
Oh, what up, what up? Always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it is always a pleasure to have you. I think for me, we took another step up. We've just been on a steady climb, and judging by what I've heard about next week, we're in for another climb. So I'm very happy with the trajectory this spotlight has gone on. And
I didn't know
Copperfield,
that.
So far, my favorite stop. So enjoyable, dude. How are you feeling?
It's only gotten better. The Dev Patel spotlight. It's just Avatar was fun. You know, it was fun, but like it just wasn't that good. It just wasn't that good. Fun because I've seen the show. That was kind of the only reason. Chappie, I'm actually having fun in that movie, but it's still like just not quite there. And I'm like, wow, what a waste of big talent in that movie. Lion? Ooh.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Well made. I'm in tears. I'm in shambles. I did not have fun.
No,
really at
not
all.
By any stretch.
Not really at all. But now.
Exactly. We both went. That's
Lion,
on the money.
Not to say that like Lion was bad or that I didn't like it, but this is just, it's good and it's fun and it's different and it's, I don't know. I liked everything that was going on. The only thing I think could have made this better, I felt like if these people could sing, it would just fuck. It would become like one of my all-time movies if it was a musical. I feel like. But no. But even without that, it was still no. I don't want to say like without it, it's terrible. I hate it now.
That's what's interesting about this movie is that I know watching it, there's a better movie in here somewhere. It's not perfect, you know. Like it's not a. It's. I would question whether I would say it's better than Lion last week. I know I like it more. But that doesn't hold me back from absolutely adoring this movie. It's the only one so far I've watched twice before we discussed it. Granted, it was probably the only one I made just enough time to do that for, but frankly, I wouldn't have done that with any others.
No.
Certainly this wasn't going to revisit The Last Airbender or Chappie, and Lion's too heavy to watch back to back. So, this was an easy one.
You gotta wait a little bit for Lion, but
I don't know
how long,
but it'll be sometime.
You're right. If I did have more time, I'm fresh off. I'm today. Well, I started last night, finished today. Not because the movie was boring or bad, because I was just so incredibly tired I had to stop. Mm. But man, was it? I guess there are some story elements that I was a little lost on, or sometimes I'm like a little lost at where. And then I just see one thing and I'm like, oh, okay, that's what they meant by all that. And like it, and then it like cleared it up. But like, I don't know if that break that I took might have
affected that.
Maybe just because name. I think a lot of it was just names a lot of times. Like there was, they threw out a name of like, hey, this person is taking over the, like the, what's his name? The weird kind of guy that moves his mouth after he talks. Yeah. And whenever he kind of was taking over and making all the, you know, just the forged transactions, whatever, like I didn't know that that's who they were referring to at first. Whenever they just mentioned it, and then later on they show him, and I'm like, oh, it's that guy. I'm like, that guy? Yeah. I'm like, wait, what? I was kind of like surprised. I'm like, okay, shit. They told me earlier.
No, I mean, but you told me where you paused last night, and that makes perfect sense on being lost on. It's a pretty natural progression, but the halfway mark, that is the only bit of the story that's also a bit, I mean, it's based off a pretty sizable book. I imagine Uriah's arc is a little bit more fleshed out there. That's a good example of one of the things that probably would have been better in a better movie, you know, and I still enjoy it a great deal, but, to key in on Dev Patel before we dive any deeper, I mean, he's, I cannot describe how much my appreciation for him has grown through this project. I mean, when they do the transition at the factory from the little guy, who I loved, by the way, I loved the little actor for young Davey. He was so good. Jairajman. Oh, I took it down. Took it down on the sheet. Because it was in, he's my favorite character, is Dev Patel and Jairaj Varsany as David Copperfield. They were too good as a duo. But whenever that transition happens where young Davey bends down and then old Davey stands up, like smile, just immediate smile crosses my face. And he immediately comes in and devours everything, you know. I love the bit. That is, I mean, a major part of the story where he adapts characteristics and mannerisms of the people he admires and strong personalities and sort of takes a little bit with him every step of the way. Because that's not an easy thing to do as an actor. And Dev Patel does it a lot. Dev Patel is really, really good at it.
Dude, you're right. He is the character. I was debating in my mind because, like, Mr. Dick is the only other, like, he's so much fun and he's just funny, but dude, it's kind of undeniable. Like,
incredible arc David goes on, man.
And it's just what a cool personality he has too. Yeah. Like, oh, I have to write that down. Like, that's a good one. And like, he's so like on the spot with like his, I don't know. I guess you went with them. I don't know. Maybe I do spread the love to remember Mr. Dick because,
Dick well
what a character. You know what? Maybe I should give him the nod, you know. So when I look back on this, I can remember. Because I will for sure remember Dev Patel. Like,
Mr. Dick, there's a part that's late in the movie that I want to touch on with Mr. Dick that I love that character and specifically his relationship to David Copperfield. He seems like the most relatable for David. Like there's a connection they have that he lacks with other characters. Not lacks in a negative way. It's just that there's a deeper understanding of each other. I think he has with Mr. Dick than he does with anybody else. But Dev Patel's presence as David, it just kind of, you get every ounce of motivation and aspiration and humbleness and everything through David alone, you know, like there's written or through David, through Dev alone. Like there is a,
he's,
there's a lot written, but
like his face, I don't know. His everything.
Eyes, bro. Oh my God. At the beginning and the end of this movie, he's basically, when he's on the stage and he's crying pretty much the whole fucking time. Like he comes on stage crying, and then his eyes are at least welled with tears.
So this is a stage reading of his own personal autobiography that they didn't know was his autobiography, because it was revealed at the end that these are real people and they come from real stories or whatever. Yeah. And whoa, that's really cool. No,
it's incredibly meta. It's incredibly meta.
Yeah, Wes Anderson saw this and was just like, all right, I understand.
All right,
you want to be maybe here. Was this, yeah, maybe this wasn't Wes saw this and he's like, okay, come into my movie. It was actually Dev Patel being like, ooh, I see this. Wes will see that in you know, like it was a long ploy to actually get into a Wes movie.
I mean, this movie's influence from Wes Anderson specifically is immense. I mean, and it's not the only movie with an actor that became a part of the Wes lexicon who was also in an Armando Iannucci film. In 2007's The Death of Stalin, directed by Armando Iannucci, Rupert Friend, who plays the fun cowboy in Asteroid City and the French Dispatch, he's the guy who gives the speech and stuff, like, and in The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugarshorts, he's the rat, or not the rat catcher, Swan.
Maybe this guy. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, they could, I haven't seen that movie. I don't know how much I'd be able to tell you if he's influenced by Wes there, but I feel like with this coming out in 2019, 2020, you can comfortably assume that, you know, visually, I don't think it's 100% there, obviously. I mean, if you're ripping Wes, there's no fucking doubt about it. You can't just do what Wes Anderson does and expect to get away with it. You know, that's kind of just his thing. So if you do it, you're going to get called out. But the story itself, the way that it keeps you at an arm's distance and doesn't let you all the way in, and kind of, it almost feels just like, I mean, a history. It feels like it's an accounting of events and you're slowly working your way to the heart of it. And then when it just fucking gets you at the end, it fucking gets you, which I think is a, if you listen to our Wes Anderson spotlight, you know, that is a characteristic we love about Wes movies.
The Wes trope. Yeah. The out of nowhere, the wait, I'm crying. Oh, wait, I'm bawling.
There were moments last night, and I think it's a combination of the movie. I mean, the music, the performances, the story itself, the relationships, where in any given moment during that last montage, where he is writing the story that we have been watching the whole time, that he is recounting on stage, when they get to that part that they've been flashing to periodically and showing him as they get to a new chapter, just him remembering everybody that's kind of made him who he is. And whenever he finally gets, like, I'm already crying. And then he gets to Agnes.
He's like, Agnes. Oh shit.
Oh, and I'm in love.
And it's in that moment that he's writing the story that he actually realizes that, like, oh shit. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like, cause dude, and that, but then it's, melt. Oh dude, what a crazy, what a moment. Like to write it in that way, to have it all come together like this, and the time, you know, time jumps, like, all, it was so fluid though. There was no confusion. Oh, yeah. It was like, it was, you got so easily what was going on. It was done so beautifully, and like, oh man, yeah, that, and I'm already crying. And then, man, why? They didn't have to include this, you know, they didn't have to, but they're like, let's just send him over the edge, you know. Let's go ahead and just break him for good. Let's bring back young David and just have him say everything's going to be all right. You know, that's like, okay. You didn't have to do that movie. You know, I was already well.
Dude, I mean, that's the line. I took down several lines during this movie because, I mean, Charles Dickens, notoriously one of the greatest writers who ever existed. So I imagine a lot of these lines are ripped bar for bar from the book. It'd be kind of idiotic not to take advantage of that. Obviously I went with the line, don't worry, you'll make it through and you'll have quite the ride along the way. That last little line, but there were several that I wanted to point out because my God, obviously this is all chronological too, because I took them down one by one as they occurred. First off, the first time Dev Patel gets to absolutely perform, you can't take something from someone who has nothing. Whenever
that was a good one.
I mean, like, that's the first time I tear up in this movie. That's about 30 minutes in. So just to give you an idea of how good, well written and well performed that moment is. And then he goes on to say, in reference to Mr. and Miss Murdstone, "You two are ghosts. You've always been dead."
Dude.
I was like, that's a fucking bar.
He wasn't mean usually, but man, when he wanted to be, he could,
he could
it hit, you know, it was concise and to the point.
Bro had a way.
The T one, you know, he'll find it
cold and stale.
Damn. Like, oh my God. Like, I don't know. Why does it just hit harder? Maybe it was his delivery of it. Maybe it's just because
I think it hits that
him.
Hard because he gives everyone the benefit of the doubt. The only person he ever doesn't give the benefit of the doubt is Uriah. And he ends up being proven right and not giving Uriah the benefit of the doubt. The conniving social climber that he is.
The whole cast, they all got something, you know, like everyone has their own thing. I think it's hilarious. Like Mr. Dick is just kind of my spotlight, like out of the supporting cast, but like also Tilda Swinton, like just being like this donkey hater, you know, like what
no donkeys.
What do they got against donkeys? You know, I'd have to assume a donkey, they had a bad experience with a donkey before, and they're just like, no more donkey. Cause you know, I don't think you're born just like hating a certain, you know, like no donkeys.
I mean, she really cares about her garden, so maybe they stomp on it, they walk on it or something. But why specifically donkeys? You know, maybe donkeys are specifically like, around this region, they're very, very vast and they're all over the place. I don't know.
Because there was someone riding a donkey. They pushed the dude off and then she went to still go like kick the donkeys. Like, no, the donkey is what she's pissed off at. Not the person riding the donkey in her yard. Just the donkey.
One of my favorite moments is, though, when she does get mad at the person. It's when David shows up for the first time to her house after the passing of his mother and being disowned by the Murdstones and leaving the factory in disgrace or not disgrace really. They loved that shit. The kids were like, fuck yeah, David. Yeah. You know, loved that. But, whenever he shows up and he's like, I just want food, you know, like, and they keep talking to him and and she goes outside and he talks to Mr. Dick for a second. He's like, is she really going to beat that boy? And Mr. Dick goes, yes. Yes, she is. Lovely woman. Very kind. And he means it 100%.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, he does. Just the way they talk. I don't know. He's so... dumb is not the right word.
No. Simple. He's a simple man.
But, like... he is like unaware of what is actually being talked about in the moment a lot. He is thinking you are talking about something else quite often. It's hard to not just have the lines in front of me, like to have like to explain
no,
them.
I
it's
mean,
just,
one
it's
of my
like,
favorite moments again is right when he shows up. And he sticks his head out the window and he's talking about, you know, King Charles, are we sure he's dead? And they're like, yeah, pretty sure he's dead. And he's like, all right, there's a boy. And the boy, you know, David starts talking to his aunt. And then after she's been dealing with donkeys and shit, and then they go inside and he looks out the window. He's like, huh, donkeys. You know, like he didn't know at all that donkeys were the reason she was outside yelling and going nuts and everything. So I just like there's a few examples like that. Whenever Mr. Wickfield. Betsy's doing everything she can to avoid giving him a drink, and then he runs downstairs and is like, how about you have a glass of port wine?
The like pushing the globe super slow. Still hear the clinky, clinky, clink like the whole time. Yeah. And he's like, oh, what? That's an interesting noise coming from that globe over there.
Long, baby.
Yeah, that was awesome. Man, he likes his alcohol, you know? Man likes to drink. And yeah, gotta love Mr. Dick just coming in and making everything simple. Yeah, you're right. Maybe simple is kind of just the best word.
There's clearly something more going on there. You know, he's obviously
He's been invaded by the mind of King Charles I. Exactly. That will get to anybody. I mean, come on.
But my favorite character moment that I didn't notice until my second time around, and I noticed the latter part, but after him, Mr. Micawber. And Mr. Dick steals the music thing. I can't remember what it's called.
I'm a criminal.
Concertina is what it's called. I'm a criminal. Run. And they go and they sit on the steps. And he's like, what an adventure we've had. And he goes, David, you know, you should write about this. And before he can finish, David cuts him off and is like, Peggotty. And he finds Peggotty. And so he tries to bring something up there. And then they get back up to the apartment. David really wants to write. And he's like, you know, you should write about our, you should write about our adventure down there. And he's like, I will as soon as I find paper. And he's like, no, like, come here. And like, he's been trying to tell him they made him a room for writing since they were outside and down there, you know, like, so it was just so sweet that he couldn't get to the point like that, but he was trying to for so long. Like, he clearly had this in mind. He wanted to make
I have it right here. Trotwood Davidson.
Yeah, Trotwood Davidson.
Yeah, Trotwood. Was just from Tilda Swinton, right? Yeah, what's Betsy? Yeah, that was Trotwood. If I'm gonna have you here, I'm gonna have you be a name that I like. So yeah. Trotwood, okay.
Jody.
And then Davidson came from after Mr. Dick. You know, he doesn't know who David is, or Trotwood in this case. So he says thank you, and then like has to ask for his name. And
Trotwood.
And then Trotwood, David's son. And then, yeah, he's, oh, thank you, Trotwood Davidson. And I was like, that was my line that I put in there. I love Mr. Dick and like all the humor that came from it. It was, a lot of my enjoyment, came from, like, I don't know, it was pretty funny, like, a lot of time. Yeah. Like,
it's
like really,
it's
really funny.
Whimsical and witty. Like, witty was the word I kept coming back to. It's very quick and, I mean, again, like, I think that I want to credit Armando Iannucci and Simon Blackwell as much as I can, but, you know, like, you're adapting something written by Charles Dickens. I imagine Charles Dickens is responsible for a lot of the best shit in the movie. You know what I'm saying? And that's, and to adapt it in a way that is concise and witty and funny, and like, I love that. It made me very, very happy. And I think that it's so snappy and sharp and all that. So I really enjoyed the comedy in the movie, and I think Mr. Dick is a large piece of the puzzle to thank for that. It does a lot to balance tragedy, and I mean, like he says at the end of the movie, this is a tale of, you know, love, loss, and life, and that's
like everything in here. Like, it's crazy. You got the coming of age story. That's just. You know, his whole life that we're following, but then you have like the revolutionary little factory spirit that, you know, little arc thrown in there. You get a little love story thrown in there, and it's, you know, maybe not going, you know, it looks all good at first, but then it's not, you know, just there's not quite ink or not quite compatible, you know, seeing them. What was her name? Was it Darcy? It started with a D. The blonde little blonde girl with the dog talked with her dog.
Dora.
Oh, Dora. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, him and Dora, and then.
Did you notice anything about the actress who plays Dora?
Wait a minute. No, but
she also plays his mom at the beginning of the movie.
Okay, that's not at all what I thought you were gonna say. I thought it was, you were gonna be like, oh, it's actually this person from this other thing, not no. in the same movie. It's a, yeah. the another he person,
plays his mom, which makes his immediate gravitation towards her and likeness towards her, obviously a bit Oedipal, but beyond that, just
wow,
they're obviously not compatible. You know, like he knows, like they're. He thinks she's pretty, he thinks she's beautiful, and she is a lovely person, you know, but, you know, she's not for him, and he's not for her, you know, that's not the case. But it was cute to see that's kind of, like, I didn't notice that till my second viewing, whenever, like, the movie I started the movie again, and I was like, that's fucking Dora, you know, like, I was like,
that's not a coincidence. Either.
No, that very is... perfect. She's the only wow. person who plays two characters in this movie, and they are wow. his mom and the woman he calls the love of his life. So, I thought,
old was he whenever, like, the last time he ever saw his mother? Like, it was the young, like, right?
Seven.
Seven
to ten. I think the young David. It's mm-hmm. probably closer to 10.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I've never actually known, like, David Copperfield, is this actually just a character that Charles Dickens made up, or is this a real, like, yeah. this is a re- it's just a character. It's just not like, character. Is he going one step further, and, like, it's, you know, Charles Dickens wrote this book, but is he taking the inspiration from real life people as well, you know, sort of thing? And it's one layer deeper, and it goes into the real world, or because, like, for some reason, I've always thought that David Copperfield was, like, an actual historical figure.
There is a gentleman named David Copperfield who is a magician who you might have heard about.
Is that who I'm thinking of?
It's
no
definitely
way.
Possible.
Maybe. That's.
I mean, he's relatively famous. Like, he's on, like, he was on TV and shit. And I've, like, he had his own show for a while, if I remember correctly. Like, in our lifetime, anyway.
I think that's it, dude. That's crazy that's actually it. That the historical figure. I was thinking something, like, around this time period, too. I'm like, oh. This time period makes sense. I'm like, yeah, David Copperfield. That sounds like a name that comes from this time period too. Yeah. I don't know.
If you
want
to get if you want to get like the other layer, it's semi-autobiographical for Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens did loosely base it on his own life.
Okay.
It's a weaving of fact and fiction and kind of, you know, dramatizing. It was originally published as a serial. Like installments and just random chapters published, and then it was ultimately compiled into a book.
I see.
But yeah, it's a semi-autobiographical based on Charles Dickens, and apparently he regarded it as his favorite work he ever did was David Copperfield, which is saying something. He did a lot of great stuff. Christmas wow. Carol, you know, every Christmas Carol movie or anything you've ever watched is based on the Charles Dickens story. You know, Great Expectations. I don't know if you had to read
that. Oh, that is him. I did.
I did not like it at the time. I'm sure I'd have a little bit more of a fonder likeness of it now. A little bit more.
It's a surprising thing. I was like the only one that was like, hey guys, this is actually like kind of good. I'm like, you guys are hating on it because it's just such a thick book and so many words.
It was
but
so
like,
fucking long, and I was 14.
Yeah, I was like, hey, but this is actually like kind of good. I'm into it. Like once
I got into it,
but
I remember being like, there were certain parts that I remember being like, oh, this was kind of cool. That was kind of cool. But for me, they were too few and far in between. Like, love the book or anything, and it was also required reading is different than reading.
That's true.
You know, that's... like if I did reading on my own time now, I would probably enjoy Great Expectations more than I did then.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, just an iconic author with so much under his belt. So David Copperfield getting an adaptation that, I mean, it's so human. It's so fantastical and whimsical and unreal, but it strikes at the heart of everybody, I feel like. I appreciate that ultimately it comes down to just kind of cherishing everybody, you know? Everybody has their importance. Everybody you meet shapes you in some way. So why not value that, you know? Like, and
I don't want to start writing shit down, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, a little thought. Jotting.
Man. Yeah. I mean, like,
ended up taking all those little jottings and making it a fucking book of his life.
And then, you know, he's, what's that guy's name? The guy who's just always asking for money.
Mr. McCauver.
Okay. McCauver. Whenever, you know, he gets whatever the last little bit that he gave him, and he's like, from writing? He's like, what the fuck? And like, that would be, man, like, that would be awesome. Like,
ideal.
You know, like, holy shit. Like, wow. I mean, it's just, you have to be good, though. You know, that's or you just write place, right time. I don't know. Like, it's so hard.
Typically at the time period this is set in. There are no movies. There are no actors. There are actors, but it's for the stage. It's not for movies and TV.
Yeah.
So playwrights and authors, you can be a rich author now, but you've got to be uber successful, like ridiculously successful to be a rich author now. You can, you know, like, you can be comfortable as a best-selling author.
Eesh. Yeah, you got to get there first.
Can't be rich as a best-selling author unless you repeatedly become a best-selling author. And that's, and even then, you're still just looking at comfort for the most part, depending on your lifestyle and stuff. But,
that's nuts. That's insane. Like, to think of, like, just to think of how long it would take me to, like, write a book of just the current life that I've lived so far. Just that. Just to sum it up and just hear it and make somewhat of a story out of it. I'll write this. It would take me, like, I don't know, like a year. Like, at least, I feel like. I mean, it would, like, I feel like I wouldn't. I feel like I'd be constantly being like, no, that's not right. I could do this better. Or, like, there's no way. There's no way I could write, like, my whole life. But then people do it for way longer than I've lived. They write an autobiography of, fuck, you know, and when they're 40, 50, whatever. And they've already written 18 other books before then. I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, holy shit.
Writing is,
so,
especially book writing, is astonishing. Like,
yeah. It's never clicked as to why, like, it actually deserves, like, the money that, like, because, like, the rights to a book, like, it always boggled my mind that, like, you could sell the rights to, like, a book or a play or, like, a script or something for, like, tens of thousands of dollars potentially. Like, it's if it is that good,
millions, and it's worthy of it. Yeah.
But now, like, as I'm seeing the, like, appreciating the craft a lot more, I think is helping me see that value.
Well, and that's the thing
more.
Is that, like, any profession, creative or not, they're typically, it's not hard labor, you know, so it's viewed as easy.
No.
It's not
no,
easy,
no, no, no,
bro.
No.
Like, that takes fucking
effort. No. Like, yes, working out, like, if you have to be in the field 24/7, that's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
But most able-bodied people can do that. There's a reason not everyone is writing best-selling books, I guess Charles Dickens. I've heard that name for sure. I just didn't know that he was that guy, but now it makes sense. You know, like, after seeing an adaptation of something that he wrote, like, I'd have to assume a lot of the right, like, yeah, why not? Why wouldn't you just take from, I don't know, an absolute
Oliver Twist? Please, sir, can I have some more? Charles Dickens. A Christmas Carol, David Copperfield, Great Expectations, A Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah, this he's done the big ones.
Several like, big
that's,
ones.
That's crazy. It's like, I don't know. I kind of thought that those were not just all him. I did not know that that was one guy. I've heard all of these names before, but I've never like actually known that they were all by him.
Yeah. Man,
it's crazy. This movie like wanted me to kind of check out Charles Dickens, but more of Armando.
Iannucci.
Iannucci. I don't know. I kind of want to see if this tracks in his other movies.
The other thing that I knew him from, the name looked so familiar. I've never watched another Iannucci film. I haven't. I've heard of Death of Stalin, and I really want to watch Death of Stalin. That's really the only other film from his filmography that's highly intriguing to me. He also has In the Loop with Peter Capaldi, who plays Mr. Macabre in this movie.
It has Tony Soprano in it, too.
Ooh, In the Loop does?
Yeah.
I'm going to check that out for sure.
He plays Lieutenant George Miller. He's number 3 on the cast. So
I love you some James Gandolfini, baby. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. But the other thing I knew him from was Veep. He created the television show Veep for HBO, starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus, where she plays the vice president of the United States. It's a it's like a satire comedy. Parody.
Recent. Yeah. Like
The last decade.
An
incredible television show.
I've never seen it, but I've seen.
Have you ever seen the little meme of Julia Louis-Dreyfus where she's like smiling and it says "What the fuck" across the bottom? She's like, "What the fuck?" That's from Veep.
Wow.
Every once in a while, you'll see something happen with. It's been happening a lot with Kamala Harris, where she'll say something and be like, "How is this not an episode of Veep?" You know, like it feels like a comedy sketch. Comedy sketch of something that would happen in real life, but it's just happening in real life. That's what else I knew the work of Armando Iannucci from. And I was kind of just like,
wow,
the dude's got range. Veep is nothing like this, you know? And I'd assume the death of Stalin is nothing like it either. This was it felt like a big swing for him. I imagine, you know, death of Stalin. It's about, you know, Stalin and real life history and stuff. So like Veep, that, you know, it feels like those could be a little bit more connected in terms of like grounded realism and like maybe, you know, playing with a comedy angle of it. But this was a big swing, I felt like, and I think it pays off. You know, like I said, I think there is a better movie in here. The Uriah stuff is unclear. I think the way that they depict David at that time in his life is really, really interesting. Whenever he does go to that school and he meets Steelforth.
What's that dude? I know you're his friend. Steelforth. Yeah.
Steerforth. Also a very, very compelling character who the actor of which, Aneurin Bernard, was also in Dunkirk, by the way. Don't know if it was in any major capacity, but I know it's his top credit.
He didn't have to do what he did out on that ship, man. You know, he didn't have to do that. That was sad. That was a very, very sad moment.
I mean, that was a sad character.
And it was like, oh, man, what a tragic. It's like he was just he instantly fell in love, but like, you're engaged. That sucks, you know? Like, that's... But you're engaged for quite some time. You're not... And, like, every time we've heard about their plans, it's like, no, we can move a mile, a quarter mile, a half mile.
Ham.
Like,
you're talking about Ham now, too.
Isn't that the...
You're crossing two characters.
Oh, no. No, the... Am I? The girl that he got with? Steerforth.
Steerforth took Emily.
Yes, which was Ham's.
Yes.
Yeah, they were engaged.
I thought you were
still
talking about Steerforth. I didn't realize you were talking
No. So, yeah, but it was just kind of like they, you know, she was promised to another guy, so it was like never fully, I don't know. It was always secretive, and then when they I don't know, eventually got to do whatever. He kind of had like a Jamie Lannister moment of sorts. It like reminded me a little bit. He's like, I'm not good. You know, I'm not good for you. Remember my best right after we have our good time to get, you know, right after we just have our good times, whatever. Then I'm riding a horse off in the distance. So, you know, I was like, whatever at that moment. But then, you know, obviously the ship moment. I'm like, no. I'm like, wait, I don't actually like hate you. No, like this is not where I want your story to go. Yeah, like, no, come back.
Everybody loves James Steerforth, except James Steerforth, you know, like that whole thing, like very, very sad. Yeah. And he's something I kind of been thinking on a little bit more is that he's like a perfect antithesis to David. They're both immediately likable. They're both loving individuals.
Mm-hmm.
One has started from the bottom and kind of climbed his way up, while the other has started at the top and resented his station. You know, like clearly his mom is having a terrible effect on James. To see the way that weighs on him, and the way that it the pressures of his life kind of get to him, and the expectations of it, and Great Expectations.
Maybe it's a little Pip here. Isn't that the boy's name? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, if I was remembering right. It's been a while.
I don't remember if thematically Pip relates to Steerforth all that much.
I don't know. Pip seems to be kind of more of the David character, if I remember. I don't know. He seems to be the underdog,
I don't remember shit about that book. I wish I did. I'll probably reread it. I'll probably go through a little bit of Charles Dickens' work after this, because I really wanted to read David Copperfield upon finishing this. But I just thought that they did a really interesting job of kind of contrasting them and comparing them. And there comes a point whenever we're about to enter the third act, when things fall apart, where Steerforth arrives at his apartment and they party and they have a great night and they go on that whole drunken silent film night, which I fucking loved.
Yeah, sped up just a little bit. That was really fun.
I love that part. I love that part. And so I think that they did a really good job of depicting how they connect on a certain level, and David is embarrassed to confess where he comes from and who he really is, and Steerforth is ashamed of where he comes from and who he really is. And you know, like, it's just it's a fascinating dichotomy that they present, and the way that it ultimately ends for Steerforth versus the way it ends for David. Like, I just think they show that, I don't really know what, almost like if you're given everything and you, the world is expected of you, the pressures are, they mount, but if you rise to the occasion and you try to reach it and it's all of your own accord, like almost there's, you can have more pride in yourself and you will feel more comfortable in your own shoes.
Mm-hmm. And it should almost be, it's almost like it was natural for like David, that it wasn't even like a surprise that like success found him at the end. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, like he's full, he's primed and ready for this moment. Mm-hmm. Like right now, it's like I guess there's still some, you know, some luck involved in getting it out, whatever. I don't, like, they didn't really harp on like how he got his money. It was just kind of like he wrote it and he's just successful now. You know, it's like
good.
Boom. Yeah. It's, I like, you know, it's it that simple. I like that.
I do.
Too. Everything is just very nice and easy and fun.
Well, and that's one of those things where like I had a connection back to Steerforth, but I think that the way that they depict David's ending is just ultimately very, very just so fulfilling. You know, I love the whole family there, found family and real family now, him and Agnes's child, sitting out.
That was cute, man.
I mean, the way they kept returning to that shot where they were looking down on like the blurred world and looking after he gets
like,
knocked out.
Gucci goo. Yeah, like, because they did that to him in the at the very beginning of the movie. Yeah, it's like it really cool. Like, just visual language that was shown. Like whenever it was baby, it was like that, like blurred background, whatever. But then like whenever he's falling in love at first and he just sees like Dora everywhere, like the hair, like over the buildings and like, you know, and he's just in love and he's just everything in the world he sees is like that. And I like that it's literal. Like it's like we are seeing it too, you know?
Yeah. No, and I think that's an excellent depiction of falling in love.
Like, yeah, I thought it was really cute. Yeah, I thought it was pretty awesome.
Seeing her name everywhere and seeing her curls and seeing all the...
The dude who had the wig just like her, like smiling at him. Yeah, no, it was awesome.
I absolutely loved all of that. And that was really, really cool. I did really, really enjoy that. There was something about this movie that like I almost feel... I almost feel it, which is bizarre to say this. I feel like it didn't go far enough with the commitment to its style. I think that it was very stylized in its performances and in its costume design and stuff. Its production design is very impressive. But I don't know. I feel like there's something more it could have done stylistically that probably could have brought it on home.
And it's like every time he's being creative or writing something down or remembering something, like it's always like during that, it's always through David's kind of eyes that we see the really cool stylistic parts of the movie. And I feel like it would have been really cool if we got like, I don't know, like a whole world, like filter. I don't know. Like imagine the whole world, everything in camera was like that. Little detail. That could have
cool
been
moments, you know. Like I love the transition from Yarmouth back to Murdstone whenever he like reaches in through the top of the boathouse and picks up the drawing and stuff. Like that's cool. And the Dora sequence is really cool. As far as I can recall, those are the only two that get like fantasy-esque with it. Like they do play with the ability to do this in this medium. You know, we're already getting meta with like the play about a book that he wrote, and the story he wrote is the journey he took to writing the book. I feel like there's just a little bit more of a playground to play with than what they.
Yeah, because I guess sometimes they go through like the back, like a screen, you know, like the back, like a white screen. They just sometimes like rip through it, and that's like a transition.
Oh yeah,
that they use sometimes, right?
I forgot. There's another part that I really like, and it was like stylistically, and it's a pretty simple trick. You can tell what they're doing pretty obviously. Whenever Betsy and Mr. Dick arrive, to David's apartment, and they explain that they got evicted and that they're lost, they're on their ass, and there's a projector on them showing what happened.
Yeah,
as they explain it. And I thought that was really, really cool. There was another part where like, and again, like these are all cool moments. I just feel like there's more to play with, and I don't know what it is. Like in the process of reading the letter that Emily left about how she ran off, and they do the same sort of projector trick onto the little sheet that's in the background, and then Ham literally talks to Steerforth. Like he enters the scene and like calls him a coward and yells at him, and then he like comes back. And I don't think it's during the time where they're reading the letter. I think it's when she's explaining how he ran off and he abandoned her.
Cool little moments like that, though. Like in our another one, whenever Dora is kind of in the writing room, or like she pops up. And then, like, it is kind of weird, you know. And then, I'm not supposed to be here, you know. It kind of like
Brian Cranston
in Asteroids, in Asteroid City.
What's she doing?
I don't know.
Yeah,
which was funny. And then, write me out. And then, like, she's actually like, oh,
that's a heavy hitting moment too.
Write me out, like, no, like, yeah, her.
I don't fit
fully.
In.
Mm-hmm. Fully yeah. come into
and that coming back around from her conversation with Betsy, where she Betsy's like, when I was young, I made a marriage that I've regretted every day since. It was not a suitable match. And she's like, oh, well, that makes me doubly happy that I found the right one then. And she's like, oh, yeah. My goodness, you are so very young. And they kind of linger on her for a second, like she's kind of realizing it. And then that moment really brings it home. And I really mm-hmm. enjoyed the romances in this movie. I love the Agnes David slow burn of sorts. I think that that's really, really good. I love that it's apparent that Agnes loves him the entire time and David is too naive to pick up on it.
I'm in love with, you know, oh, I'm sorry. I don't know why I said it like that. But with Splendor. Yeah.
Splendor for whatever. Yeah,
her being like, oh, like I remember her face, like whenever he leaves, like to go walking back towards Dora, like she's just like really, really, like, I don't know. That was just the one word coming to mind.
Yeah,
but no, a lot of great just facial acting from everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was just, but Dev Patel, I don't know, his eyes. It's crazy what he can do with his eyes. He's gotten the oh, damn. I did give Sean Trobe Sean Tobe, Uncle Iroh. Damn it, the performance. And that makes me feel bad because I was about to say that Dev Patel is just gone. I mean, every time for the performance.
No, I mean, like, you were spreading love that first time around, though, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was. Yeah.
Every time since then, he's been undoubtedly the best. And that's been like, and that one, he's doing, you know, he's the best of the style of acting they're doing. Sean Tobe has a little bit more of a grounded approach to Uncle Iroh versus the animated kind of exuberance that all the kids are doing with their characters. So it is a little different, but I think that
nice.
I mean, like in a cast like this with Peter Capaldi and Tilda Swinton and Huey Laurie and all sorts of great faces and great actors to be just a cut above. To be the guy, Gwendolyn Christie.
Oh yeah, man! How funny was that? I said we had a Jamie Lannister moment, but we also had a Brienne moment, literally, yeah, but
literally.
Not Brienne whatsoever.
Yes.
Not at all.
She was a pleasant surprise. I love seeing that. And
let his father correct him or whatever. Like her verbiage was like,
he is teaching. Let him.
Yeah,
teach.
Yeah. Damn.
Well, and then David calling back to that when he sees Uriah and his mom gaining power and him being like, I've seen people like this before, you know, like we need to take them down. We need to figure out how to get them out of here, you know.
Draw a house, draw a boat, you know, or whatever, or draw a boat. Like the way he was like, he was also like an actor, you know, acting them out as, you know, because I don't know, I feel like a lot of things like kind of just hit me like as first is like, oh, I guess whenever someone is sitting down to write a long story, they probably do act out in a, you know, by themselves while they're writing that, or they hear, they have a certain voice for certain characters and it probably helps to say it out loud, you know, or to actually not just have it in your head the whole time. Mm-hmm. But to act it out, and especially if you can have those like mouth movements, the like after, you know, after I don't know, I'm terrible with names.
Uriah.
And these names are, yeah, Uriah,
Mr. Heap.
But like, I don't know, I feel like that's just it's a cool insight to writing that I've never even thought of, and now knowing that David Copperfield is kind of a shoo-in for
Charles Dickens
himself. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Knowing like one of the greatest writers of all time is what it seems like is he's in that debate. Maybe I don't know. And if that's how, you know, it seems like a pretty good method.
Certainly can lock in that way.
Yeah, I don't know.
It also takes a certain just a specific character quirk. You know, like. I loved the way that he was talking to Peggotty about Gwendolyn Christie's character as she was on screen. And you know, he says that she has a face of like butter, or like some sort of butter. And she's like, oh, that's yeah. good. You should write that
Ooh,
down.
That's a good one. You should write that one down. And she's like, damn, that was a good one.
He's like, I'm later. And I love that little back and forth, you know. I really loved the
I have
child.
Another line from her. Is that her name, Peggotty or Pat? Peggotty. It was, you need to love the ones that help you and help out the ones that you love. And that's a Peggotty something. Oh, what did she say? And that's a Peggotty pact or a Peggotty. Oh my God. What did she call it? Promise. It was actually so Peggotty. Maybe promise.
I mean, like her character introduction is great too. Whenever David is being born I keep wanting to call her Trotwell, but Trotwood. Is that it?
Trotwood. Yeah. Trotwood.
She shows up and, you know, she's like, what's your name? Peggotty? Peggotty? Do I have that right? You're telling me that at your christening, you took your name to be Peggotty. And she's like, what's your name? And she's like, Trotwood. Oh, I'm sorry. I could have swore your name was Pot Kettle Black, but all right. You know, like that whole shit. Yeah. I loved it. I loved that. So
wow, that's an instant favorite. The Dora playing his mom is like, what the fuck? Like 3 more seconds. She's like, 3 seconds is not long enough. Like that's her. Like the Dora, what, yeah. dude? That's
chick.
Crazy.
I'm trying to remember. I can't remember her actor's
name. That is
name.
Crazy. Wow.
Yeah, Morfydd Clark. She plays both Clara Copperfield and Dora Spenlow. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Wow. Yeah, no, this was, I don't know, I haven't ordered my favorite movies of all time list. It's just kind of, it's a lot. And I just haven't gotten to ordering it yet, but this one was a very clear addition, and it's going to be up there. Like it'll be like, yeah, definitely above Endgame. And Endgame was like 50, in my top 50. So like that's kind of my ballpark of where I'm at. I've seen a lot of movies since my top 100, but this is definitely north of 50. I would say for me, I don't know. It's gonna be like a nice comfort movie. Like I will definitely watch this again. Like you said, it was one that you watched twice, and it's the only one that you've watched twice on the spotlight so far. But I will definitely get to it again. That's for sure. Like this one, I don't know. It was just so fun. And I want to give it its like full time. I want to be able to sit through it, and not have a break in the middle. And fall asleep and have like a whole different day. Cause technically I went Personal History of David Copperfield, fell asleep, woke up, watched The Bad Batch.
Yeah.
And
a little
then
bit of interruption in the middle.
Went back to the, yeah. So, I mean, it was nice. I'm not going to lie. I had a good, it was a great night and a great morning.
Oh yeah.
Like, can't lie. Very good, good comfort movie. I don't know.
It's absolutely a really interesting, and just so many characters with so many interesting little things about them, you know. Tunge, who like repeats everything his boss says.
Yeah, what is up with that? The hype man kind of guy? Yeah. Oh my
like
gosh.
The yes man, you know, yeah. Like.
And then like whenever he says his name, he's like, he even
oh,
says,
shit, that's me.
He's like,
yeah.
Oh, yep. That's
gotta
me.
Lock
yeah.
in.
Man. Yeah. Dude was, oh yeah. Like she's super, super ill, or like, she's so sick. She's dead. Yeah, like he was the one to be like, nah,
and
she's
like,
dead. And really, like, from you, dude? Yeah. Like, this is how I'm hearing. What
Frankly,
the
if
fuck?
There's anybody in the room I do want to hear it from, it's probably him. Jane was taking joy in the fact that he wasn't there for his mom's funeral.
Yeah, what the fuck? What the fuck?
Evil, evil woman. Just absolutely maniacal.
What? What did they, like, why? What did this mother? What? Mother? what, where go wrong? You know, what, why, what was so great about this dude? She was, she just stuck with it.
The way that she said, I think like it's a different time. She kind of has to stick with it. There's like, a lot of churches don't, oh shit, sorry. A lot of churches don't observe divorce anyway. So like, I wouldn't be able to get away with that. And also, I mean, the way that she puts it to David when they're married, she's like, you have a dad now, you know, like more, I think more than anything, she wanted a father for David. And the way he presents for David initially is not great, but it's not entirely unappealing. He does seem like a steady figure. He's definitely putting on a face so that he can marry this woman. And then they get married and he's like, oh, well, I'm going to change your fucking life. You know?
That's true. Yeah. Damn.
Yeah, it's quite sad. But there was actually, I believe, I'm looking through the credits right now and I'm realizing there's the doctor who cleans up David after he gets in the fist fight with the guy who's like, "Oi, ladies, I could beat both of you with one hand tied behind my back." He gets into a fight with that guy. The doctor who cleans him up played what was his name? He was in Lion. He was the brother. Mosh, whatever. I can't remember. It was like Mosh something.
Masha? That doesn't sound right.
That's the king of comedy. Mantosh. Mantosh. Starts with an M, ends with OSH. Okay. There's something in the middle. Mantosh. He was the doctor who cleans him up.
Wow.
So a nice little Lion crossover there. Like seeing that.
Is that it? Is it Gudu?
No, Mantosh.
That's his brother?
Not his blood brother, the adopted brother.
Okay. I got you now. Okay.
Gudu
I was
thinking, the blood brother, though.
Thinking the wrong. Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah, and obviously there's all sorts of actor crossovers and connections with all sorts of other things. There's some more obvious ones like Huey Laurie, I believe is his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Hugh Laurie, Peter Dick. He was also Dr. House in House. Peter Capaldi, another doctor, the doctor, Doctor Who.
Okay.
Tilda Swinton, obviously, all sorts of shit. Gwendolyn Christie, Brienne of Tarth. But there are some fun ones here. There are some fun. Wong, Doctor Strange.
Tilda Swinton and Wong. In Doctor Strange.
Good call.
I was just looking through the trivia. I remember Wong in Doctor Strange, obviously. I did not remember Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, what? The ancient one.
Hello. Why did I think the bald, just being bald, that did it for me.
Also,
I was like, I'm thinking of her hair. I'm thinking of her like iconic, just kind of like her hair.
The ancient one also
what Marvel character
white,
has her
so
hair.
That's also an odd choice to make her a white woman.
Man, yeah, I was blanking so hard on like who does Tilda Swinton play? Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. But there are a little bit more deep cuts. Nikki Amuka Bird, who plays Steerforth's mom. I know her. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I know her from a TV show, a Netflix original TV show, which I absolutely love, called Lovesick. Strongly recommend. She's in one episode of it. I was looking at her like, what the fuck do I know her from? And it was that one episode of Lovesick. She's been in all sorts of other shit, though. She's been in a couple M. Night movies. She was in Jupiter Ascending. So she's no nobody or anything, but the other big one is Brona Gallagher, Mrs. Micawber. She was in Pulp Fiction, and she was in The Phantom Menace. If you'll recall, the a very formative part of The Phantom Menace as well, the pilot flying into the station, who's like, "Wait, what's going on there?" At the very beginning, when they blow up, she's the pilot of the cruiser there.
Well, that's why I've never
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't have made that connection. No, not by any stretch. But
she blows up.
Yeah, she blows up within the first 5-10 minutes of the movie.
That's incredible. Wow. Yes.
And then Pulp Fiction, she's there for the scene where Uma Thurman is ODing, and they bring her over to the house, and they have to inject adrenaline into her system. She's one of the chicks who's present during that scene, along with Rosanna Arquette, who we saw OD herself in After Hours.
Jeez, a lot of wow,
a lot of ODing, no ODing in this movie, which is good.
Nope. There's a little during the London. He was like, I got to finally experience the London something, the full London experience, and he took a hit of something. I don't know what it was.
Oh yeah.
But during this time period, I don't know what they got. It was, you know,
opium.
That's probably the most realistic. Yeah. And that's why. But they were going fast motion. Well, that was just more the style. Yeah, they were also just really drunk. Yeah, they were just, they're fucked. They were having fun. They're having a great time.
To be sure.
Wow. I need to go with the Mr. Dick line. I was about to go with the Peggy. Man, it does get me. Peggy line, but no, I like, he was just, I think that's the most surprising thing, is that I've known Mr. Dick only to, like, the actor, to be so serious and like Dr. House, like that is, you know, just like the guy that everyone hates, but is actually like a good guy deep down and whatever. I've seen enough of the show on TikTok to like, I guess, get the character by now, which is sad. I maybe should just watch the show at this point, but no, here it's just not at all the same. It is just completely different, and I don't know. It's awesome. I just love seeing actors be able, like, in such different roles.
I love whenever guys who usually play serious get to play silly. That's a lot.
Yeah. This would be so much fun, you know, the outfits they get to wear, it's all old-timey.
Dude,
Dev was stunting in some of these as well. Bro. Like, I wish we could dress like that. Like, why is it not acceptable? Can it be acceptable if someone was, like, Dev had, like, one suit where, like, the back of the suit kind of came down. It was like a little bit of a cape almost. Down a little bit, but up a little, you know, at the end. And like, I, you don't see that anywhere, like at all. Like, I feel like, but that is something where I feel like it could be brought in to world right now and it not be so shocking compared to the rest. But no, loved the costume design. It was awesome. Maybe the set design maybe that's what it could have been. Like, that could have taken it to the next level if they fully went, like, in on a specific style.
Yeah, no, because, I mean, like, I love the boathouse. I thought that was so fucking cool. That's a great idea. And there are certain, we spend a lot of time with interiors, you know, so it's just kind of like, there's only so much you can do beyond a general view of things. And then when we were outside, it was a lot of landscapes. It was a lot. It was very pretty. It was just.
Yeah. That's where my shot did come from. Yeah. Whenever they're on their picnic. I mean, basically pick any of them. Whenever they're on their picnic, there's a lot of them that stood out. But there was one where, I mean, it kind of looked like they were going for a postcard. Kind of like, I don't know, it was kind of, the camera was kind of low in the grass, and they were up on kind of like a hill, and you saw just everyone laying there, just, I don't know, all smiling, looking away from the camera, and then the sun was just like perfectly on them as well, and I was just like, ah, I'm like, oh, that was, this is nice, I'm like, yeah. I,
There's a lot of pretty scenery in this movie. There's like an overhead shot of them trotting down the road in a horse-drawn carriage and stuff. Mm, like that.
Yeah.
That was very pretty. I love Flat. The last shot of Agnes and him on the hillside overlooking the ocean. Mm. Like, that was gorgeous. But ultimately, I went with one that just made me feel very, very deeply, and it's when David is about to re-enter the home, as it is now his home, and looking back at the family he's made along the way, and you just kind of look, and the sides of the frame are blurred out, and the greenery is you know, all the shrubs and stuff. I absolutely loved that. So that was what I went with there. And line, I mean, like, it's hard not to go with the obvious. I'm going to go with the obvious.
If you are not, I will. So one of us has to, I feel like.
Don't worry, you'll make it through, and you'll have quite the ride along the way. And I told you earlier, I took a few more down just because there are a few more well-composed lines that don't make me feel as deeply, but I was just like, God damn.
I mean, I literally have thank you, Trotwood Davidson, just so I would remember Trotwood Davidson pretty much.
Right,
so if you want me just to take the easy go-to end line.
And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'll take the easy go-to. I just wanted to give some more shout-outs.
Okay.
Whenever they're trying to teach him how to read, and they're just like, do it, just read. And they're like, I can't. He's like, I can't when you're watching me. And he's like, just do it. And Jane's like, do it. And his mom's like, it's okay, honey. And he's like, no, it's not okay, honey. Either he gets it or he doesn't, you know, like that whole thing. But he says, I'm sorry, I can't do it when you're watching me. The words have skates and they skim away.
Man, there were a lot of little sayings like that that were like just such clever wordplay that was like I've never heard before, but that made sense instantly. That it's not like, I feel like there's a lot of word
your head.
Yeah, there's a lot of wordplay that's just like fluffing it up to make it look good, but this is like clever wordplay that actually like describes kind of like, maybe not dyslexia, but
yeah, it's not quite just what like he was experiencing,
just but like, you know, nervousness and the just a lot of, you know, just he's young as well, and like it's a new, like reading is a new thing, you know. I don't know, I guess is he used to reading? Is that the idea, that he does read, he writes, you know?
That's but what he, makes me think he legit can't read to people, because later on Steerforth asks him to read to
him.
Yeah,
that's like, what I was going to say. This book, he comes up with something instead of reading.
Well, and that's what's interesting is that, like, if he can't read, why was he sitting there staring at a book? Like, he can read. He can't read to people, I think, is kind of how I take it.
Staring? What do you mean staring at a book?
He was sitting with the book over him when Steerforth asks him to read.
Yeah, but then you saw his vision of the letters, and it was just
because Steerforth asked him to read to him.
Is that just because it like reminded him of his?
I'm going with the headcanon of David being incapable of reading to people. He said, because he tells him, I can't do it while you're watching me. That's what he tells
Steerforth. Says that, or he says that
to his stepdad.
Yeah, like, I think the reason he can't read to Steerforth is because of the moment he has with his stepdad when he's young, because it, you know, but that leads me to believe that he never learned to read. Like, I think he, but if you can write,
you can write.
That's the, I guess there's no way. If you can write,
you can read. You have to know what you're writing.
So it's just the fact to read to another person.
That's what I'm going with, because it does not make sense that he can't read otherwise.
There's a lot of fantastical
about this movie, but like, there's no
world where you can write and you're the best writer in the world. No, or he's not the best writer in the world, but he's mimicking whatever. But like, you know, he becomes a very successful writer, and you can't read.
That's the thing, is that he conquers it. He's reading.
Was there
to
a scene where... Oh, okay. I guess I didn't really click that or put that together.
I don't know if he's reading. It's like he's memorized the story he's telling, more like it's a production of it.
But
but
I'd say yeah, so.
It's a performance, you know, he's giving it to everybody. Like, so which could be why there's tears filling his eyes the whole time. Like, that's part of it.
Wow. Oh, but, wow. That's okay. That's awesome. That's how we got his kite. That was his kite. You know, he didn't have someone to like fly a kite or to like kind of give him I don't know what you want to call that, you know, like an escape. It's not really an escape for Mr. Dick, relief. But kind of like, yeah, like a relief. And he didn't quite have that, but he kind of wrote himself one, you know, he's like, if I do a play, then I kind of have to read to people and I'll just have to do it, you know, And it'll be that's the first time I ever do it. Yeah. But maybe it's something that he wrote though. So it kind of works. He's okay with coming, like telling someone stories that he's come up with because like it's his own. Maybe that's why. Maybe he doesn't like reading other people's work. You know, it's like you read it or like he comes up with his own stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be, that could also be it because he's obviously a natural born storyteller. They make that clear.
Yeah, he just rips like, and just the inspiration he pulls is clear. Like, it's really cool to just see his method of kind of writing and like coming up with the story.
Yeah, man. Like, a few more of the lines that I took down were, the bottles are propelled by iron pistons that nod up and down like melancholy mad elephants. That was one that was literally called to for how good it was in the movie by Mr. Dick.
Mr. Dick,
he said it again during the montage when he's going through writing stuff. So you know that they liked that line. They were like, that's kind of hard.
Yeah, they're like, Dickens went extra hard with this one. I don't know. I'd imagine. I don't know. I don't want to know.
I'd be impressed if it was the screenplay. Like,
hey, if it is them, then one, damn.
I mean, there's a few, you know. He was lost beneath the rugged foam is very simple, but I really liked that about drowning. He was lost beneath the rugged foam, and that's a whole good like that's a great scene for Ham,
dude. And Ham being the one to go out there too, that was freaking.
I'm not watching another man die.
I watched in the trivia. Ham dies there. Ham drowns too. In the book,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, in the book. Gotcha.
In the book. Yeah. No. Not in the, yeah. In the book. Ham
dies like,
there.
We're going real meta in this movie, yeah, no. Huh?
In the book, Ham dies, and then Dora, they actually get married. They have a kid, but the kid kills Dora. And that's how the relationship ends in the book. Yeah. So, like,
the book is intensely darker, it sounds like.
Yeah. Like, they decided, let's take the story and let's just make it fun
let's
and
make
happy.
It a little brighter.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it got sadness to it, but it didn't need that much darkness.
I know.
Movie.
I was like, holy crap. There were other good things that were added, like from the book. Like, who was it? Like Peggy had someone that she married eventually in the books, apparently, that was a bigger character. Another relationship. Another big character that just kind of wasn't in here. A whole school arc that David went on, that they just kind of combined with the factory arc in the movie, which I think good move.
Kid who was like, that thing on his back, writing, what's it say?
I won't lie though, it didn't hit me that they couldn't read until like he was like, I don't know, like that he's making that joke. Like a lot of the times it was a Mr. Dick joke as well. That was like, I don't know, like he was supposed to be the one that was like behind or something. And sometimes I was also like, oh shit, I was thinking the same way Mr. Dick was. Yeah. And I'm like, reality check. Hold on. Wait a minute.
Hold the
like,
phone.
Am I okay? Yeah. Do I have the thoughts of some, I don't know, entering my head? You know? Yeah. King George, are you up there? I hope not. My last name is George. That's weird.
True. Could be a connection. Could be something there.
This is strange.
But the last line I will mention is, she brought everything to a grindstone and sharpened it, as she had sharpened her own face and figure over the years. She was now all edge.
It has to be like Charles. That has to be out of the book, because like when I heard that line, I am like, holy shit. If I saw that in a book, I would be like, I don't know. I don't know. I heard that line and I'm like, that was just unbelievably written. How can you that concisely, like, and to describe that character? I don't know. Just perfect. If it isn't Dickens, and that's just this.
I looked it up. Yeah, I looked it up because I was curious. Yeah, it's in chapter 20. Steerforth's home is the chapter of the book that it is a part of.
That's just what good writing is like, man.
Yeah.
Holy shit! Like, what if people spoke like that still? Maybe that's why the world just sucks. Is because we're not speaking like this. People used to speak just way cooler, and we've just dumbed. I mean, we're efficient. That's the thing, is that like, it's not as beautiful, but our speak is very efficient, and we get the idea across that we want very fast. But man, I'd like to have melancholy. I don't ever say the word melancholy. I don't ever
put your vocab up.
Yeah, or just like shall. You know, or just words like that, old words that we
every
don't
once
use
in a
anymore.
While, I've gotten, I don't do it so much on the podcast, but I hit Emily with some old timey jargon every once in a while.
Do it in text, you know. I don't do it in actual speak. I need to be confident enough to do it in actual speak to people.
What's funny is it started as like a bit, you know. And now sometimes I just say things like that.
Yeah. Like, indeed, I will say, indeed is the one word I actually do vocally say as well. It is my text. It is like, indeed. I don't know. Like that is kind of my like, more than indeed. Yes, you know, like yes and.
Like for I'm, sure. I'm,
yes,
yeah.
indeed, man. You know, yeah. like, But
no, like, I'll hit her with a, whenever we're like leaving the house and I'm telling my parents where we're going to go, oh, we're pushing forth unto the grocery store. You know, shit like that. And it's like,
yes. Pushing forth onto the grocery store, making our way yonder down the road, you know,
the grocery store. Man. We shall return at dawn.
That's part, you know, perfect. Yeah. Like, yeah, don't use time, daybreak, dawn, twilight, nightfall. You know, we gotta start using that shit
that
again.
Back. Yeah.
The clothes that people are wearing in this movie, we gotta bring that stuff back. I don't know. I like the timepiece too of the movie, kind of just seeing.
Oh yeah.
Big Ben was being built. You know, that was like kind of cool. It was like, was cool. Just to even think about that. I'm like, I've never thought about Big Ben being built, but I'm like, yeah, I guess at some point people would have lived just to see that thing be built. And then like, oh, there's Big Ben from now on.
Man, I loved the movie. I had a great time with it. There's all sorts of really just like, it's a really for as light as it is in terms of tone and as you know, as sad as it can be and then hopeful and, It's pretty dense in terms of just like there's a lot of stuff we didn't even touch on, you know, like when it comes to the intricacies of some of the Yarmouth family and how, you know, we mentioned Ham going out there. Ham's parents died of drowning. Emily's parents died of drowning. He's not going to go watch another man drown. Like that's his whole like and then he does. And it's just like apparently that's some shit that happens down in Yarmouth.
Very diverse cast as well, you know.
Very,
not
the rules of biology.
Yeah, didn't give a fuck. At first, I'm like, okay, so some of these kids, you know, I was like, I was applying the standard rules of biology, you know, at first, and I was thinking like, that some of these kids like just were adopted, but then I'm like, oh wait, they just actually don't give a fuck. Like it hit, I don't know when it hit me, and I'm like, oh wait, yeah, they just actually don't give a fuck. And I'm like,
I think it hit me with the introduction of Mr. Wickfield and Agnes. I think is when I was like, oh, okay, maybe they don't, like, they probably don't. And then they introduced James Steerforth's mom, and I was like, they definitely don't give a shit about this, which, yeah. I highly invite, you know, like, because initially I was just kind of like, oh, for a period piece, it's kind of cool that David's dad was a brown man, you know, like, that's kind of what I assumed, yeah. You know, and then we, yeah.
I think this might be the first movie in which that's ever been a thing for me. Like, even Star Wars kind of does it.
No, they observe
Think of like another movie that has done that. I don't know. Like,
the only other thing that I can think of is a stage play that was filmed and put on Disney Plus, Hamilton. Hamilton doesn't observe that. People are cast in the roles they're cast in, and that's just kind of it. Which I guess is a fucking, like, there are certain mediums and certain genres in which that doesn't work. You can't always do that, you know. I enjoy that idea.
This is a very lighthearted, like,
and also
goofy,
just,
we, yeah, like,
it's theatrical. Movie. It feels like a play. It feels like it feels like a stage production, and I think you can kind of do that, you know. And that's a good example of them taking advantage of the stylized version of the reality they've chosen to depict. And I really, really enjoyed that. I thought that was a great choice. You know, if you're going to cast, like, it gave them the freedom to cast the correct people for the roles, you know, like, it didn't matter. And I thought that was, I mean, it paid off. Everyone's role is exactly who it needs to be.
Like, obviously there is give and take there, but I'd say, like, the talent gain or, like, the more suited for the role benefit that you'll gain for the movie rather than just, like, keeping biological rules correct, you know? Realism. Like,
yeah.
Like, it does help just to let everyone know. Yeah, I don't know, it's easier just to be like, okay, that's clearly the mom, the dad, whatever, you know? But, like, I guess that's why maybe I'm having a little tougher time with the names of people. Right. Is that also it's tougher to know who their parents are, you know, or something. Everybody. But like at the end of the day, it's not like the names are even really that important, you know. Yeah, it's like I still get what their character is doing and like and what they're about. So
no, and it's also the type of movie it is. You know, you're watching. Yeah, I don't know. The Wolf of Wall Street, and they cut to the scene where they introduce Jordan Belfort's parents, and they're both one of them's a black man and the other's an Asian lady, you know, like, you're gonna have some questions because this is The Wolf of Wall Street, you know. Like, I think here it just kind of, it works naturally, and I think that's a different, it's just a type of movie, and I think that it majorly pays off. Like I said, everyone's exactly right for their role. I think that, like, and obviously, observing historical accuracy would have resulted in the least diverse cast you could imagine. So, I thought that it worked out perfectly that we get such a diverse group of people portraying such a zany group of characters and playing them to fucking perfection. Like, I absolutely, like, I adored this movie. It's going to do very well in our ratings. Do we have much more to say on it?
I think that that is all the favorites. We did hit all of them, and yeah, I think, I don't know. That is the thing. It is dense, like you said. There is so much in here, but a lot of it you just got to be there for. You just got to, like, you got to be in the moment and, like, just be with all the characters and just experience. And I don't know. Definitely a new comfort movie. That's for sure.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, we gave Lion an 8.5. I mean, I already knew. I was higher than Lion, like, automatically. Like, I knew it was, like, 9 was the floor
nine
here.
9 or higher, yeah.
It wasn't, you know, it's a 5-star on Letterboxd, that's for sure. But the 10 out of 10 enjoyment.
Tough tier to break on our podcast. It's a limited group of movies. But before we get into that, I'm going to do the plugs, if you would. head to patreon.com/pennybloompod where you'll find over 50 hours of exclusive content, all sorts of book reviews, comic book reviews, movie reviews, and the like. And for $3 a month, you can support this podcast financially, which is huge because it costs me money and I don't make any off of it unless it's over there. Head to Twitter, follow at pennybloompod, follow on Instagram and TikTok at pennybloompodcast. Remember to leave a 5-star rate and review wherever you might be listening, and like if you're watching on YouTube. That's huge. If you're not, you can look up Penny Bloom Podcast on YouTube. You'll find us there. Like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Joe does all the work to put that up on YouTube, and I appreciate it greatly. Because that is not something I'm capable of, quite literally. My computer will fucking die. In a more meaningful way than battery loss. Yeah. With that, let's go ahead and rate this bad boy. How are you feeling?
Well, it is in between. It's in between a 9 and a 9.75. I just don't know quite where. And I wanted to just kind of, I don't know, see the others. But my gut is like a 9.25, a 9. I think that, I don't know. That is kind of where I land most of the time. Yeah.
My gut took me to a 9. I think that the 9.25 even I could be talked into. Like, I truly do not mind bumping it up if we're gonna do this. Like, I loved the movie. I had a great fucking time with the movie. So if we want to bump it a little bit, I'm okay with that. It's just that while I absolutely adored it and it's an extremely comfortable movie, I know for a fact there's a lot of movies that I like more than it that are more comfortable than it, and that shouldn't necessarily weigh how I look at this movie in and of itself, but I do think it ultimately affects. If there are more movies that are more comfortable and are more enjoyable, it does have to fall down the rating, fall a tiny bit rating wise. What are some of our previous 9s and 9.25s spotlight wise? How are you feeling there?
We've got 9.25s. We got Life Aquatic, Isle of Dogs.
Tough.
The Killer and Ferrari, and 9 would be Dunkirk, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, Gangs of New York, Fight Club, and that's it.
Okay.
So
that makes me feel comfortably 9.25.
Life Aquatic felt like
an apt comparison. There were some of those where, like, the first four you list, I think you only listed four for 9.25, where I was like, the first two I want to put above it, the last two I want to put below it. So it's fascinating to think that, like,
Life Aquatic, Isle of Dogs,
9.25 tier.
Yeah.
Killer and Ferrari. I was like,
Killer, Ferrari. I think the end 9.25s, they're like, well, I guess Life Aquatic and Isle of Dogs were early. That was Wes. That was our first director spotlight we did, you know. And then by the time we get to The Killer and Ferrari, we've done it for a while. But yeah, I don't know. I think 9.25. I think it does deserve that.
I'm comfortable with that. It perfectly splits those movies for me, you know. The couple Wes Andersons I think I like more. The Fincher and The Man down there I think I liked a little less, you know.
Yeah, I definitely put it more on par.
Microscopic, you know, 0.1 decimals here. So, like, you know, it is what it is.
Two objects cannot occupy the same space in time. Or at the same time, yeah.
Yeah.
I was too focused on the accent right there. I was not focused on the words. My brain was overheating. I don't know. It was like, can only do one thing at a time right now, but.
Two objects cannot occupy the same place at the same time.
That man. I don't know. That movie's just... And now I'm going to watch Ferrari tonight. Damn it. Yeah.
No. Damn it.
New movie.
But where do you sit critically, you think?
Okay. Lion was an 8.75.
I think, personally, I think Lion's a better movie. I don't know how much better. I do think that it is a more complete, more complete story. There's just, this movie has a lot to do. There is a, like we said, one of its benefits, enjoyability wise, and something it does a pretty good job at, just not a great job at, is giving every supporting character a fulfilling and understandable and complete route to the fulfillment mm-hmm. of their story. Like, I loved Agnes. I really loved Agnes. Very simple, very plain, crushing on him the whole time. All of a sudden at the end, he realizes they're in love, they're together. You know, like, and that's a very simple arc, and I appreciate how simple it is. So that's just one of those things where I think that Greg Fraser's photography of Lion is a better looking movie than The Personal History of David Copperfield was.
I'd say, like, performances is like, it's, you know.
Same thing with, like, the writing. How do you really compare that? Like, we're talking like a fantastical novel put to the page and really, really worked out. And like, they're both adaptations from books, which is about all you can say for the writing. One of them is based on a 100% true story that is absolutely real and devastating. The other is, you know, a blend of fact and fiction that you got to imagine was embellished, especially given what we know about the movie compared to the book now, into a lighter tone. So, you know, I think
the book's dark, but this, I think it's in the seven.
I would even go as eight.
There's
a lot to like here. I like the score a lot. I think that was an underrated part of this movie. It made me feel a lot. It wasn't like the music by itself isn't something I'd go and listen to too much of, but the music really, really worked for the movie. And I think that's the most important part when you're talking about score. Mm-hmm.
You like an 8 flat?
I don't, you say like, an 8 flat. Mm-hmm. Like an 8 would be an 8 would be my ceiling. I'm comfortably there, but the thing is I could see getting more critical of it. I think that there's a, while there's a lot to like, I think that this movie has its flaws. It does, you know, like again, the main antagonist becoming Uriah is kind of like, oh, interesting. Like he just kind of suddenly creeps into that spot. And I think that's part of the point, but how much of that climb to that spot is influenced by David's dismissiveness of him and talking shit behind his back? How much of that did he hear? Are those part of his motives in social climbing, or was he already social climbing and David happened to be there? You know, so like, that's the thing, is that when it came to Uriah, the main antagonist, there was some specificities that I felt could have been aired out a little bit. It is what it is, you know, like I still enjoy the final product, but I think that's a part where I think he could have improved.
We don't have any 8 flats.
No,
We do have a 7.75. That's Rushmore. We have a 7.25. That is Bottle Rocket. But then we only have 8 fives, and I think maybe I saw 1.825. But Life Aquatic was an 8.5. Isle of Dogs 8.5.
Yeah.
Barbie an 8.25. And then the shorts, the West shorts, were an 8.5.
This is an 8. Yeah, this is an 8 for sure. I think that
it just needed that musical twist.
I think that would have helped it too.
I don't know. I would have. I really was waiting for it to happen. I thought it was going to
provide a fun, pretty, and just generally good way to present exposition.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of what, it's part of what songs, like that bit where I'm talking about Uriah and not being able to know what his motivations are. He would have a song in a musical where he explains his fucking motivation.
Yes, you know? He gives his whole evil plan in a song.
And that's why I'm like, you know, we're talking about a whole different movie at that point. So I do think it would, obviously that can't hurt it. It can only help it. You know, that's the sort of shit there. But, and obviously,
it's what they're going for, though. I don't know. Like, I literally thought it was going to happen at multiple points. And then it just never quite did. That was the only kind of gripe, like only kind of thing I was like, oh man, that would have been really cool. But I can't like can't hate a movie for not being a musical, you know? Yeah, no, like I can't,
it can't hurt it. It can only help it, you know? Like it's the same thing as Barbie. Should have been a musical, but does that make it a worse movie? I don't think so. Like it's just, I think it could have made it a better movie, but I don't think it makes it a worse movie because it wasn't a musical. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I think that it's comfortably not as good as a lot of those movies you listed. Rushmore, I would even, I'd personally be a little hesitant, but we're talking about a 0.25 difference there. And I like it more than Rushmore. So I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with a 9.25 and an 8, it's an 8.42 or an 84%. Which, let's see, as compared to other averages, do we have any other 8.4? We do. A Manhunter was an 8.4. That's the only 8.4 we have.
All right. Interesting. Interesting one there. But it sadly come out just beneath Lion as that weight we put on Critical does lift it a bit.
It did. Did it? Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, wow, I guess. Is that just true? I mean, I guess.
I mean, yeah, it's a more enjoyable movie, and we did so by about
0.75. That does make sense. Worst movie,
and we did that by about 0.75.
Yeah. It's just this one is way more fun, way more rewatchable. Mm. I think that's what's in my mind. It's like, is that this one is just so much more rewatchable that I feel like it should be better, but it's like, no, Lion was still a great movie. Like that was. It just happened to be very sad.
Very heavy subject matter. And while there's a humanness to this, it's not real, you know, like it's there's a heart to it that strikes the chords in everybody and it should, but it's.
Yeah. This one was real with quotes, but Lion was real.
Real.
That one, a little too real. Maybe, it was
also a time period thing there. Period pieces are a little bit easier to separate yourself from the reality of. Lion is set now for the most part.
Sorry to people in like the medieval times. If you die, like I really don't like I'm so far attached from those people, you know, like it's no offense to you guys. You like my ancestors, I guess. Fuck. I'm defending my bloodline. I'm offending my bloodline right now, but it is weird. Yeah.
Enter the battlefields.
I guess in my blood, do I have someone that picked up a sword and fought on a battlefield at some point? That is kind of likely.
Possible.
You
it's
know,
possible.
Like, which is weird to think about. But,
no, it is. It is. But yeah. At an 84%, that brings us to a close for the personal history of David Copperfield. And I have a feeling we're going to elevate again next week with our last episode prior to Monkey Man on the Dev Patel Spotlight for The Green Knight, another fantasy film that I'm very excited for.
I saw one shot of maybe like a little green flame on a throne or something. I don't know. And it just looked super cool.
It's a gorgeous looking movie. I've seen
that's like the only thing I've seen for
it's everything. Got a little bit of a cult classicness to it already. There are people who put it among their like the best movies of the 2020s.
Fuck yeah. Oh hell so, yes. And Monkey Man is the one after it. So
banger, banger, banger.
Holy
banger
shit. Dev, dude. Let's go. Yeah.
Cannot fucking wait.
Dev
but
is feeding us.
Feeding. Besides that, this Friday, we will continue our watch of The Bad Batch Season 3, the final season of The Bad Batch for the Star Wars fans. This is Season 3, Episode 9 this week, and we're nearing the end of that season. We're also nearing the end of Winter is Blooming, our Game of Thrones rewatch podcast on Mondays. This next week is Season 8, Episode 4?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. This next week is Season 8, Episode 4, and very, very, so yeah, and if you want any more content, Like I said, Patreon, we got it there for you. Go back through our entire backlog of over 500 episodes. We've got plenty. But yeah, with that, I was Colton Robertson, and I was joined by Joseph George. Thank you very much, homie.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it's always a pleasure to have you. And remember, peace, love, and bloom, and always praise Dev Patel.